Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. We're real excited to welcome to our program today Joshua Zeman. He's one of the filmmakers and directors behind a new show that's coming to A&E on November the 12th called The Killing Season. You've probably already been seeing the premieres on television as well as online. We're going to be talking to Joshua not only about his own success as a filmmaker and what it's been like for him to have his work recognized, but also about this new project, how it came about, what it was like for him to work with Rachel Mills on this project and others, and what he hopes you as the viewer are able to take away from this true life show. Joshua, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me, Cyrus.
Hey, glad to have you on with us. You know, it's been really amazing. When I was prepping for this segment with you, you know, to think about not only what you've been able to do with The Killing Season we're going to see in November, but even before this, I mean, this is something that you've been recognized for quite some time, Joshua, your ability to be able to not only to share a story, but to be able to really make an impact, you know, with the viewer. What has it been like for you to reflect on this journey of not only covering, you know, these true crime stories, but also being able to see the recognition your work has gotten?
It's kind of interesting, you know. I think when I was starting out, it wasn't really something that a lot of people understood because they hadn't seen this type of, I guess, journalism before. You know, a very kind of active investigation going along for the journey, and so it's been really interesting. You know, my first film, Cropsey, was very much about true crime as well, and it was about how communities create their own monsters and. You know, nobody had really kind of looked at, you know, the role that urban legends played in the creation of those monsters. And so it was very interesting to present true crime, I guess, in a different way. From that, right. we were able to do Killer Legends, which was a pilot that also looked at kind of the intersection of urban legends and true crime. And then off the success of that, we were able to do this show, which is quite different in terms of, I guess, its scope. I mean, we're talking about 8 episodes looking at the Gilgo Beach case, which is still unsolved. You know, you have 10 sex workers found along a desolate highway, and then the connections to other unsolved cases around the country of, you know, unsolved serial murders of sex workers. So it really allowed us to kind of really paint a big picture, if you will.
Right. Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned Cropsey, and in fact, we were just talking briefly, you know, about talking about that before we began the segment. Joshua, one of the things I noticed when I was prepping for this segment was, I mean, for one thing, the attention that it got, and like you said, it was so different. You know, I guess the question I would have, I mean, no one knows what's going to happen with a project. I think with anything that anyone in the creative community, you never know how it's going to be received. I mean, how did you get the courage, you know, to be able, for one, to do it? And then, you know, and with not knowing how it was going to be received, you know, how did you get the courage to do it and then, of course, to be able to put it out the way that you did?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I always wanted to tell stories, and I wanted to tell stories, you know, in a narrative sense. I wanted to write fiction films. But Cropsey was a way for me to kind of go back and to tell a story, a crime story, in a documentary form. I felt it at the time, it was just like a test run for doing a movie. But it ended up being much more than that, and it when you're doing a documentary, it has an additional layer of being real, and that makes it all the more creepy. I guess, you know, at the time, Blair Witch had come out, and so people were kind of into that intersection of truth and fear. And so I guess, you know, it was good timing. But what I will tell you is that film took 10 years to make.
Wow.
The pretrial motions for the case that we were following took 4 years. And so at one point it became my white elephant. I didn't even know if I was ever going to finish it. And it was interesting. The moment I kind of stopped caring so much And I said, you know what, darn it, you know, it's just that I have to finish this film or I'm going to hate myself for the rest of my life. I was able to finish it. And, you know, again, when we put it out there, people hadn't quite seen a quote-unquote horror documentary. They didn't know what it was. And I remember people didn't quite know what to think, and I was kind of lamenting to my friend. And he said, listen, you know, that's the problem with being the first. No one knows what it is. You know, and so, but now, you know, it was weird, only because a couple, finally, like 5 years later, people were like, oh, I love that film, and I like how creepy it was, and I like how, what you tried to accomplish back then.
Right. I should say, for those who have not had a chance to see Cropsey, I mean, you can get it through our partner at Amazon.com. You can either rent it or buy it from there. Over 200 Amazon.com reviews, Joshua, on that film. On Amazon.com alone. And, you know, a lot of the main ones talk about not only how terrifying it was, but also how engaging it was. So I guess that takes us to this question before we get into the killing season. How did you realize, or when did you realize, that you had the ability to bring people in, to make them at least feel comfortable enough to tell their story and let them know that their stories were important?
That's a good question. I think, and, you know, I think it's funny because everybody likes true crime, you know, and there's a lot of true crime, but I think that's the problem with true crime. In a lot of ways, it could be feel very exploitative, and, you know, especially when you have tragedy. And I guess you just have to come into it realizing that we're dealing with real people, with real crimes. I mean, heck, you know, you've never had quite an experience as when you sat with a parent whose child isn't just dead, but his child has never been found.
Right.
And that was 20, 30 years ago. I don't think you can ever understand or truly comprehend the tragedy of that situation. And that was my first film. You know, that I was a rookie. And so I think from those experiences, I've always known how important it is to remember the victims and to be sympathetic and to understand that we're talking about their loved ones. And, you know, it kind of upsets me when I see other projects like there was a project I just literally saw yesterday that, you know, deals with people's families, you know, being portrayed as like, you know, a body being wrapped in a burlap bag and being thrown along the side of a road. I don't see how you can be so exploitative about that. It truly hurts me.
Right. I think that is. And that says a lot, though, about you as to why also you're able to get the interviews that you're able to get, Joshua. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome to our program today our filmmaker and director, Joshua Zeman. We're talking with him not only about his own journey as a storyteller through film, but what it's been like for him to do work that he's passionate about and to be able to see the response. We were talking about one of his first projects that people got to know him for, and that being Cropsey. That leads us right to what is going on at the end of this year, that being the killing season coming to A&E. So, you know, this is not the first time you've worked with the individual that also is with you on this project, Rachel Mills. Talk to us about that partnership and what it's been like for you to work with other filmmakers and bringing these stories to life, Josh.
Working with Rachel has been great. I think we both bring different things to the table. I think we bring both, and that's male and female. I think that's really important. And then, you know, two sides of it. I tend to look at things from a true crime standpoint, and I don't think she does. She doesn't look at it specifically from that point. She's very humanistic in that way, and I think you really need to play off each other to kind of represent both sides of the audience. And so it's great to work with a collaborative partner. Also, someone has a good day, the other person takes over. Someone has a bad day, the other person takes over. You know, I think you need to be able to do that, especially with material like we've been dealing with, which is, you know, the murders of sex workers, you know, all across the country. It's dark stuff. And I think, you know, you need to be able to talk about it with somebody and also kind of push each other to be the best that they can be when dealing with this stuff.
Exactly. And I think that is it for sure. You know, I want to say this, too, about your work, and I noticed this, too, when I was prepping, is that you tell stories that, you know, are not only difficult, Joshua, but also that for some people they may wonder, okay, you know, why are you telling that story? Talk to us about that when it comes to the killing season and what kind of made you all say this is a story that you want to be told and maybe even enlighten people about that may not even be familiar with it.
Well, I think that's, you know, you touch on something really interesting. After I made Cropsey, which was about a couple missing kids, people were always saying, oh, you know, please make another, make something else about serial murder. And, you know, I didn't want to. I was disgusted, you know. I had spent time with families whose children had been killed, and, you know, there were a lot of shows coming out that kind of, you know, spoke about serial murders as evil geniuses or made it some kind of titillating thing, and I just wanted to show the truth. I wanted to tell people that that's not what it's really like out there. And sometimes, yes, it could be pretty tragic. You know, when this case happened, what happened was a girl named Shannon Gilbert disappeared after she was an escort. She disappeared in Long Island, and police went searching for her. They couldn't find her, but, you know, a couple months later in the same area, they found four sex workers along a desolate highway. 2 months later, they found six more sex workers along the same desolate highway. So while searching for one escort, they found 10 individuals. And so, like many people, we thought this case was going to be quickly solved. I mean, you're talking about 10 bodies. And you know, in Long Island, which is just in the backyard of New York City, we thought, you know, we live in a CSI world where there must be some kind of physical evidence that's going to solve this case, or like Law and Order, it's going to be solved in a half an hour. But, you know, after the first year, there were no arrests. After the second year, there were no arrests, and we started to hear about a lot of political backstabbing, about a lot of politics that were coming into play, bureaucracy, and that gave us an opportunity to pick up the camera and to show the world what really goes on in a serial murder investigation, kind of the dark, dirty truth behind what they really see on TV, kind of dispelling the Hollywood tropes.
You know, I've talked to some criminal investigators on this program over the years, Josh, and one of the questions I asked them, I want to ask you, because, I mean, doing this work that you're doing, is it easy to let it go after the cameras stop rolling? Is it easy for you to let it go once it's released? I mean, how difficult is it for you to be able to detach yourself from it once you've invested so much of yourself into it?
You know, I don't know if I'm trying to think of what the people who you, you know, the law enforcement people, but, you know, these become in many ways like your children, and it's all one long narrative, you know, Cropsey leading to the killing season. You know, I think we're just trying to give these stories and these cases justice. You know, I think we're trying to bring justice for people who deserve justice. I mean, we're trying to enlighten the audience and educate them about what really goes on. In Cropsey, I think I was trying to show all these kids who were, you know, looking at fake found footage and those movies, and I said, listen, if you want to see something really scary, just look at real life. Look at how we were treating the mentally ill in the 1980s. And you know, we show that Geraldo footage that totally kind of scares kids, and that just, it can show you that true life is just as scary if you kind of, you know, really look at it through that lens. You don't need horror films, and let's educate ourselves about how to make it not scary. And here we have this case where we have these sex workers who still, after so many years, don't have any justice. And one of the amazing things that we've learned is that sex work is changing. The world's oldest profession is changing as we know it. It's no longer women who are walking up and down the street in some back alley in the city. With the advent of the internet, we have Backpage and we have Craigslist, and now women are taking selfies and meeting up at the Holiday Inn up the street, and you know, it doesn't have that shame attached to it anymore. But unfortunately, in some ways, it's just as dangerous, and in some ways, it's much less dangerous because these women don't have to have tents anymore. So
right.
It was very, by looking at this case, we were able to see some very interesting things that I was able to tell the world, hey, you know, this is what a real serial killer case looks like. And when we start to widen out, as you'll see in towards the end of the show, we found that, you know, it's, we have this idea that law enforcement is putting information into supercomputers 24/7 and they know so many things, but what we found out is that's not really true. Unfortunately, law enforcement is very fractured. There's 20,000 different law enforcement agencies in the United States, and not a lot of them talk to each other about their murder data. They don't really share murder data. So what we're hoping to do is to educate the public and to, you know, compel these law enforcement agencies to please work together.
Right. And I think that is the thing. So, and I think that goes to a totally big picture for all of us. Do you also hope, because I also think this, Josh, about the work that you've been able to do, the work that Rachel does and so many others do, it really shows us how you don't have to have a badge. You don't have to be in a position of authority to care and to want to see justice being done, even when it seems like it's a situation that has absolutely nothing to do with us. Is that one of the things that you've also seen in the way that your work has been received that shows how all of us kind of have a responsibility for each other to make sure that there is some justice and that other people's stories are told?
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing, right? You know, if for some reason we are not helping those who need our help most, and really we should, you know, we can't rely on law enforcement alone. It's unrealistic. You know, they're overworked and underpaid. They don't have the budgets. And so it really takes a village, you know. And, you know, I really think that everybody can do their part, and it's really, you don't have to have a badge. You know, we're right in the middle of some really important conversations about community policing and law enforcement. And, you know, for example, we go to Cleveland, and, you know, they have a real issue with community policing, but we are trying to encourage others to do their part. You know, you can't just complain about law enforcement but not have a role in the solution.
Right.
And we want to be part of the solution. We want to say, okay, you know, everybody can take a part in this. Look, in for example, in Long Island, right, this case, again, you know, these women need justice, but there are 5 individuals who have yet to be identified. And that's some place where the police can really use help. They don't have the resources to scan through 50 years of newspaper articles, public records, facial recognitions, and we don't have the computer power to do that. So we've spoken to a lot of web sleuthers on this site, websleuth.com. These people were really great at identifying these missing and unidentified. And so we are trying to kind of bridge together those people who want to help and law enforcement, and kind of showing, you know, the issues that both sides face. And if we can, you know, bring these people together, then maybe we really can solve this case.
For sure. Well, it's definitely something for us to look forward to. Again, coming to A&E starting Saturday, November the 12th, that being the killing season at 9 p.m.
Yep.
Eastern time. Of course, check your local listing as well, again, on A&E. Josh, I really appreciate the time. I know it's a busy time for you as you've been doing a lot of promotion. I've been keeping up with you on social media, so I know you've been really busy. How can our audience stay connected with you? And will Rachel and you be live tweeting during the show?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And even more interesting, I think, live tweeting, yes, for sure, but the other thing you can do is you can go to websleuth.com, and that, again, is this kind of citizen sleuth site. It's heavily moderated, which is great, and you can really be part of the investigation. You know, that's where we'll be during the whole week, talking to people, doing radio shows, and really bringing up the questions and the clues that we believe are integral to solving this case. So it's a little bit like America's Most Wanted 2.0, you know, in terms of creating this active experience for listeners where they can really be part, again, of the investigation. And if they want to follow us up to then, I'm very active on Twitter, at Josh Zeman, and that's at J-O-S-H-Z-E-M-A-N. You can also catch us on Facebook, and we have a site for Cropsy as well. Please also check out Cropsy on Amazon and Killer Legends as well.
All right. Well, Josh, again, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to staying connected with you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Josh, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb, or you can go to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.